When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Talking Leafs. I'm Chris.
And I'm Sil.
And happy Mother's Day. We're going to start off with a good note here. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
Yes, happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of Leaf fans that are moms out there, obviously, right? And yeah, they're having their day. It's a bright, sunny day here in Toronto, so that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But not so good thing, the Maple Leaf season is done. Yeah, and the Stanley Cup drought continues for this team, 57 years and counting. And yeah, by now, obviously, we all know the Leafs lost their second round series to the Florida Panthers in 5 games. And there are a lot of questions that are going to be going into the offseason here for this team.
Yeah, so we're going to get right into it. But just a quick programming note, after this episode, we will be reverting back to our usual schedule. So you'll find our show twice a month, starting with the first Wednesday of the month, and then again, 2 weeks later, also on a Wednesday. So make sure you hit that follow button wherever you listen to our show so you don't miss an episode. And a reminder, you can also find us and watch us on YouTube now. Our handle there is at LTL1917. So watch our show and see videos that we've posted from Leaf games we've attended, including some from the playoffs. You know, we can just kind of bask in the glory of some of the good old days, I guess. But anyway, now we're going to get into the show and we're going to start with the good, the bad, the ugly playoff edition. And then we're going to run the Ladies Talking Leaf playoff highlight reel. And in our third period segment, we are welcoming to the show Toronto Sun columnist Lance Hornby to talk about the Leafs' 2023 playoff run and what could be next for the Leafs. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
All right. The good, the bad, the ugly playoff edition. Yes. Yeah. It's the first time I think we're doing it for the playoffs, but there's some things that just stand out on each category. So, yeah. So for the good, we're just going to say the good, obviously, it's an obvious thing, is getting past the first round and of the playoffs, beating Tampa finally after 20 years, getting past that, getting over that hump. And the positive impact, we got to give some positivity here for Joseph Woll and Matthew Nyes and the impact that they had in the playoffs. So, yeah. And also, we got to give it, you know, obviously, they lost in 5 games here for the second round. But, I mean, and the core four were not the core four in that series. But the core four did show up for that first round, definitely, and contributed big time offensively. And some positive stats too, we got from SN Stats, like the first team in NHL history to win 3 overtime games as a road team in a single playoff series. So I don't know, sometimes you kind of think of it was a little bit of a mind game thing there. So I think that the team, like, because of that, they might have thought they were like a team of destiny, that they were just going to keep rolling sort of thing. And they, I don't know, I just, but you got to give them credit that way, right? You can't just to say that that meant nothing, like getting past that hump finally, right? So yeah. And as for, like, the future is bright, obviously, with Joseph Woll and in goal coming in game number 2 versus the Panthers. Like, that was incredible that he could do that. And after Samsonov got injured, and then Matt Nyes, on the positive, like, he got his first NHL goal as a playoff goal. And he he was going good out there. I think he was a little bit free in his play that way, right? Coming in new, obviously, to the league, which was a good thing, but then it was also a bad thing because he needed to keep pick his spots basically and look out for those dirty NHL players like Sam Bennett of the Panthers, who basically nearly tore his head off by slamming into the ice. So
unfortunately, I think that's, you know, where the inexperience didn't really affect his play so much because he made a lot of really good plays. He was really good along the boards. He was able to get the puck out in tight spots and really contribute to, forcing the offense, with his forechecking. And I honestly think that if he didn't get hurt, I think we would be looking at a different, like, you don't want to put that much on a rookie, kid. but I honestly think that his style of play added a something there that we did not have. And it was so glaringly missing after he was taken out.
Yeah, it had to be because Florida was keying on him that whole game, right away.
Oh, for sure.
Trying to take him out.
They tried to take him out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did. Succeeded. So, definitely. Because of that, I agree with you. The future is so bright with that kid. I guess we can't expect the trajectory to be, you know, just straight up because it never works that way. But, he has got something special about him and you can tell he's got a work ethic too. And so I love to see that. And as far as Wall, he's so cool, so calm. Just a very sound, athletic, economical, guy back there, and to step in that situation, I think, you know, and perform so well, pretty amazing. And definitely we want to celebrate that win. I know we don't like to talk about what more that needs to be learned, but if there's anything that could be learned is that, you know, they've never had to make an adjustment between rounds for another team. You know what I mean? And I think that's what they couldn't do. So it took them, I don't know, hopefully it's not going to take them 5 years each time to figure out how to get past another round. But it was the thing that was glaring to me is that they just weren't able to make the adjustments as they were against Tampa in the second round. So,
And just that whole mental thing too. I do think that they were thinking that they were going to play Boston.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mentally they're prepared for that.
Yeah. And then and this falls back to the regular season, they play down to their opponent's level. I mean, this is different in the playoffs, obviously, but during the regular season, they just play down to the opponent. And, it was, like I said, you can't not give them that. Like they finally got over the hump. Ryan O'Reilly helped them there, I think, definitely. And the moves that Kyle Dubas made at the deadline. And
those guys, all of those guys really contributed. And you could argue that some of those acquisitions were the most successful in this round, even though we didn't actually, you know, win to be able to continue to the conference final. But those guys all showed up to a man, really.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. 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 So we are giving them kudos for that.
Yes.
All right. Let's go to the back.
And it was fun to celebrate something for a change.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. For the fans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And like we're saying, the whole, the whole generation of Leaf fans that haven't seen a playoff win, like they managed to get out there on Yonge Street and celebrate, have a bit of a party there, which is really good for that.
So, you know, for all the people that were saying that, you know, people shouldn't have bothered doing that and how lame is that, da, da, da. I'm glad that they did because we're seeing now that, you know, that was the end of the line, really. So, if they wouldn't have done that, there could be some regrets there. So no regrets. Celebrate when you can celebrate.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to the bad. Obviously, the path to the cup final was there. And the core four were nowhere to be found in this round and nowhere near getting the job done. So obviously there's going to be some changes that need to be made. And I don't know. I suspect that we're going to have some disagreement here when we start talking about this. But anyways,
they had zero goals, basically.
Well, yes, yes.
Like, just to say the, I mean, minus Willie, I guess, like with Mitch Marner, John Tavares, and
well, it just to me, just even looking at it's Marner and Austin Matthews that
they're the key
are the key that the fact that there's, I mean, Matthews didn't have as much offense as we would expect for both rounds, really. I mean, I know they all produced in the first round, but the fact that there is no goals scored.
Yeah. And every game, basically, I just looked it up, but every game we only scored two goals.
No, and you can't, there's no way you can win like that.
And you can't win like that based on how our team is built.
Exactly. Like
we're built to score.
Yes. We're not the New York Islanders.
No. So, and I don't know, I going to Syl's comment there, what I was telling her off the air here, was that I do have his jersey, but I think Mitch Marner is the one that has to go. I don't know. I'm just,
well,
I hate to say it because he loves being a Maple Leaf. Obviously he grew up being a Maple Leaf. There's that video of him as a little kid, he's so cute there, and saying like his favorite team is the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I just don't think after so many, it's 7 years now, I guess, that they've been together with Willie and Austin. But out of those three, I just don't think that he can handle the pressure, no matter.
Okay.
He talks to Doug Gilmore all the time. Mm-hmm. I know that. And that's one of our favorites, obviously.
Then maybe Dougie's doing something wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, we should tell him that. Dougie, go talk to your buddy in the summertime there, Mitch, and show him what needs
maybe
to be
needs
done.
Maybe he needs to give him a harder line. I don't know. Different recipes. Eat more pasta. I don't know what it is. Anyway.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, though.
Okay.
My question is, you know, back in the 80s, for example, you know, when you were a huge, huge Rick Vive fan, were you advocating for him to be traded?
No, but as everyone always says with different times, you had a loser owner there in Harold Ballard who basically wasn't going to listen to the fans anyways or listen to the team, the coach, whatever, the general manager. He was controlling everything and he was out of his mind. So he traded him.
Question number two, were you ever advocating for them to trade Wendell Clark?
No.
So to me, my thinking is, do I think there needs to be changes? Will there be changes made? Yes, there will be changes made. I will never, I don't ever feel, I don't know. I don't feel like I can advocate for the players that I love, that I enjoy watching, who are so talented to be traded. If they get traded, I will 100% understand that it needs to be done and that, you know, and I'll be sad, but I'll get over it because that's what I've been doing in the whole lifetime of me being a fan of this team. But I will never, ever look at all of these guys that I love to watch and go, I want that guy out, or I think he's the one to go. I just don't believe that.
It's not to do with him, though. It's to do with the mix of the team.
No, I agree with you.
I think that we need, I mean, I'm not just saying, obviously, neither of us are saying, like, we all know a change has to be made, and neither of us is saying just give them away for nothing for the bag of pucks, as we've said so many times. But there needs to be another dimension. They need a jolt, like we said last year, right? And the year before.
What
they
I want
a jolt.
Yeah, but what I want to happen is what I think the job of a GM is you need to identify the player that you are missing in the mix. Then you need to go through the league and be like, okay, I'm going to call that GM and say, I want this guy. And it should be a high profile player, high profile defenseman, whatever, whoever that person is. And then if they come back and they say, okay, to get that deal done, we want Mitch Marner. Then you say, yes, okay, we're going to give you Mitch for that. But I don't like the opposite scenario where you are identifying a player who is super talented on your roster and saying, okay, this is the guy that I'm going to work to move. I'm going to call people and I'm going to say, we've got this guy to offer. What are you going to give us? I don't like that scenario. I prefer the, if you're a good GM worth your salt, you're not looking at getting rid of a guy. You are looking at who do I need and who do I target, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get that job done. I think that's what, for example, Masai Ujiri did when they got Kawhi Leonard. They identified Kawhi Leonard. They called San Antonio and they said, what is it going to take to get him? And they said, DeMar DeRozan. Do you think Masai Ujiri was wanting to give him up? No way, no how. He loved that guy. And he knew that it would be hard on the team and that it would be hard for them to get over it. But look what it did. It provided that jolt. But I think that's the way you go about it. Is
so you'd prefer the other team to ask Kyle Dubas or whoever's going to be the GM to say, I want Austin Matthews, or Austin Matthews, to me, it's still.
Well, yeah, because then that's how you negotiate. Then you say, if they say Austin, well, first of all, that would take a whole heck of a lot of balls for Kyle Dubas then to say, okay. But it's going to take a lot more than just a Kawhi Leonard of that team to come back.
Oh, yeah.
But do you know what I mean?
And it's a lot of balls for the other GM too to ask 100%. For that.
But that is the start of the negotiation. It's not about what you can give. It's about what you want to get. That is is how you do it, I personally think.
Yeah.
Because what do Leaf fans lament all the time? We let these guys go and then they become stars and they put it together somewhere else. That's because that GM, when we call, if we're calling up and saying, you know, what can I get for this guy? They want them. Of course they do. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to be negotiating
Joe
from
Sack, technically. But technically, for an example, like Joe Sakic, I don't know who called who at the time, but like with the Kadri deal, Naz, going back to that one, right? Like, well, I think actually it's right. Maybe like the way you're saying, like Kyle Dubas must have said, I want Tyson Berry.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe Joe Sakic came back and said, yeah, I want Naz, because he's looking at his team there, who eventually did win the Stanley Cup the following season. That like, yeah, that's the part that I need in my mix to be with Nathan MacKinnon and those boys. And it didn't work out, obviously, at all for us in that deal. That's probably his worst deal ever.
Yeah.
And for Kyle Dubas. And but on Colorado's side, that was. And now.
But you know what? To a man, every single person that evaluated that that deal.
Sorry for bringing that up again. I
thought it was good. But yeah, so
I know.
Yeah, it didn't turn out great. But the point is, though, is that
you're saying. Here she goes again with Naz and Kadri.
Yeah. But anyways, but my point is that I think that is how you do it. If you want to make a big swing, then you better be the one, you know, targeting somebody and then seeing what they want, as opposed to, you know, giving away your best assets, you know, without getting potentially back 100% what you want. So I think you got to start there. And does that mean that I don't believe that there needs to be a shakeup? Of course, that's not what I mean, but that's how you do it. That's how you get your Kawhi that is going to pay dividends, you know?
Yeah, and take us on a longer playoff run. That's the ultimate goal here.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking a lot about this for the next few weeks anyways, because
heads are going to roll. Like, personally, for me, I think the first shoe to drop, and we'll all see, you know, how this plays out. But I think maybe Sheldon Keefe is the one that needs to go, and they need to start there with the coach. And to me, if Dubas does stay in the job, that's showing balls enough, you know, to fire your best friend in a way, you know, like, I would think that, you know, when he hired him, he knew he might have to fire him. So,
oh, for sure.
It's a and unless, like, and if he's the guy that, you know, is willing to, like he said, always says, fall on his sword and go down with his coach, then I don't know. Then to me, if you're willing to just leave the Toronto Maple Leafs when winning here is the, there's nothing bigger, then he's not the right guy for us in the first place. You know what I mean?
Right.
If yeah, after, when the, yeah, when yeah. push comes to shove and we're going to have to fire your buddy, and then he's just going to say, you know, I'm going to leave too. Then he yeah, doesn't have the balls to stay here.
Yeah. It's going to work in the reverse anyways. Like, well, depending on what happens to Shanahan too, like it might even end up, I don't think so. I think Brandon Shanahan is going to be fine. I think
there are relationship a lot of wild cards Moore, here. So,
but yeah, but it's going to be Kyle Dubas basically. If there's a GM trade that or GM change, that's going to be first.
Yeah.
And then the coaching after that, if it happens, but something definitely, like you said, heads are going to roll. Something has to happen after this is technically it's 9 years since the Shanahan plan has started here. So, and it's 7 years with the three players as the core that they built. And then, JT joined a couple of seasons later. But
I will say that there's a lot of stars that it took a long time for them to win.
Oh yeah.
Theirs,
no, you know? That's for sure.
And you look at, you know, okay. If you look at even just a core two, if you look at Austin and Mitch, that's comparable to Ovechkin and Backstrom. It took them 9 years to get their cup, you know, and there's a lot more examples of that. You know, where you've got a tandem like that and it took longer. Like not everyone is like Taves and Kane. I'm mixing them up. Taves and Kane or Sidon and
too, right? Yeah. Malkin or just Crosby on his own.
Yeah. Like it's just those are the because those were such positive impacts and it happened right away. We want to look to that and think it always happens like that. But more often than not, that's not the case. So, you know, is that a fun thing to think about? No, but I don't know. I'm still hopeful. But obviously there's going to be changes and there need to be. And I'm going to be sad or lamenting some of what happens, but then eventually I'll get over it and hopefully our team will win.
Yeah.
And then I'll be happy. Yeah,
it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny that way that it's a long time since we've been in this situation where we actually know something is going to happen, like something, it has to happen. Whereas,
what if it doesn't?
that would be like, we'd be floored. All of us
that
would be like waiting.
The bigger shock.
Yeah. We'd be waiting into patio season and into our patio season shows and like, okay, when is this going to happen? Right. But and we're definitely going to be, it's going to be an interesting patio season. Let's just say that for ladies talking Leafs. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on to the ugly. And they definitely took this all season long. The big prize we should get some sort of trophy for them is the NHL officiating. Not saying that the officiating was the reason we lost the series versus the Panthers, but that goal, that was a goal. Morgan Riley scored a goal late in the second period in game number 5. And it was a goal. Like you were there.
And interestingly, the same situation in reverse where it wasn't a goal on Samsonov was called a goal.
Yep. Corey Perry.
Yeah.
Yep. That goal. Yeah. So basically it basically killed, you know, they always say, the reverse thing, like it'll come back to help you. Well, in this case, twice it didn't. Mm-hmm. not for the Leafs anyways, right? Both goals worked against us on these phantom type goals, however they call it. So it started in game 1 versus the Lightning where also David Camp got the phantom high stick on Braden Point. And he actually scored a power play goal on that phantom high stick. And Corey Perry, like we just mentioned, had the goal, which wasn't a goal, on Samsonov in game 1 of the series versus Tampa. And then, of course, there was Sam Bennett, which we kind of mentioned before with his antics, slamming Matthew Knies to the ice, causing Knies to have a concussion. and not even a penalty on the play. And also Radko Gudas taking liberties all the time. And basically, I don't know how many strides he took from the blue line. I mean, on Twitter, we did tweet that we didn't think it was like a suspension or anything. But then after looking at it again, like he should have got a boarding call at least. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was, kudos to David Camp for actually getting up and like that he got labeled, like that was a hard hit. And again, no penalty on that. And those are just a few examples. I mean, there was the holding the stick, Radko Gudas on the OT winner that eventually basically let Florida go on. I mean, he was holding
Yarncroak's stick.
Yeah. And I mean, Yarncroak, I suppose, could have like really pulled it, but I like to try and get it out of the grip of, but he would have been too late to get to the check anyways. And most likely they wouldn't have called it anyways, because it would have been in the back of the net by that time and whatever. Yeah. So yeah, just a few examples, and there was many more, and the bunting, I mean, yes, it was a suspension, but then I compare it to, so this is going on to NHL player safety, which is a joke as well. When you look at other suspensions that have happened in these playoffs, the most recent, I guess, with Petrangelo in Vegas and doing the tomahawk chop to Draisaitl. But again, you look at who it is. There is a double standard there, I think, as opposed like, you know, like, they always give the benefit of the doubt to these higher profile players.
Mm-hmm. And except when there are high profile players.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yeah. Again. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, I don't want to, like we said, it's not why, I mean, we needed to score goals. That's why we lost this series versus the Panthers. Mm-hmm. Our top players didn't score the goals for us, which is how our team is supposed, is built. It's built for that. For them to score goals and win us games. They did that in the first series, but they didn't do it in the second series.
That's right. Yeah. No, I don't really, there's not much more to add there because you really said it all. Anyway, it's not a good look, and it makes the NHL look like a joke. So, yeah, it's, and considering, you know, for example, on those, like the NHL talked a lot about puck tracking. Rachel Dory mentioned it a lot on her Twitter. They have that technology and they're so excited, you know, that they have it. But these are the situations where you should be using it. And apparently it's not as accurate as they would like it to be. But, you know, you can add it to your tools, though, to make your final decision.
Yeah. So the puck tracking is basically just for the listeners, like it, obviously it's to see if the puck crossed the line totally and a better view of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they don't have that, right?
They have it, but they don't use it right now.
Okay. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's move on then, since we complained enough about that and it's kind of been negative, let's just say, but time to move on to some positives. So for that, we're going to run the Ladies Talking Leafs playoff highlight reel. Let's roll it.
All right. So coming in at number three, we have Luke Shen. So Shen proved to be a really good D partner for Morgan Rielly. He was so solid back there and really a lot more mobile than any of us thought he was going to be. He had a diving poke check on Carter Verhaeghe in game 4 versus the Panthers that probably saved us a goal and got us to at least the game 5.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he definitely, we talked this about, you talked a lot about him in our last episode, just how strong he is with the pairing with Morgan Rielly. And, he is a UFA, so hopefully he'll want to come back. He was so happy to come here. Mm-hmm.
I would love to see a whole season of the two of them playing together.
Yeah. Yeah. And
because I honestly think that Morgan Rielly then might have the guy that is going to give him the stability back there where he can maybe put together another Norris caliber season, you know, because he really came to play and he played so great in these 2 rounds. I think, you know, he, you know, for what it's worth, you know, he's our Conn Smythe winner, I think. If you're looking at the whole playoffs, Rielly.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And we'll get to him. Mm-hmm. but Luke Shen, basically some couple of stats. I just have like the 11 playoff games he played with us, 64 hits, and he was on for just 2 goals against 5-on-5.
So that's something.
That's something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's definitely worth every penny. I don't even remember what we traded for him. Mm-hmm. But yeah. That's okay. yeah. And we just hope that he decides to re-sign and stay a Leaf. Mm-hmm.
Finish his career out here.
Yeah. Exactly. And have better success, obviously, in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So moving on to number 2 on our highlight reel, we've talked a little bit about him already, is our young rookie goalie, Joseph Wall. He reminds me a little bit of Felix Potvin.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So he had to come in early in the second period in game 3 versus the Panthers, and really tough position. And not only for a 24-year-old young goalie to come in a playoff game, but Wall stood tall and he got his first playoff win in an elimination game on top of that versus the Panthers. And then I just hate that picture. With Gudas staring in his face. Yeah. Yeah. I just horrible. Like, you know what? Screw you.
It's classless.
I'm just like, yeah, exactly. Right. So, but for everything, like for what he to come in like that when Samsonov got injured. And I mean, kudos to Samsonov. We really haven't talked to him a bit, but mm-hmm. with, or a lot about in these playoffs. But
yes, because he got us this far. So
yes. Yeah. And yeah. So with Joseph Wall, though, he's played 11 NHL games total. This is going from the Leafs website and his stats. He has a record of 9-2-0, goals against average 2.38. Save percentage 9.24.
It's pretty darn good.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. And bottom line really is, though, in these playoffs, it wasn't the goaltending that.
No. Like for a change, we actually had goalies that stole us some games. So, and that's, you know, we've been clamoring for that for years.
Yeah. They gave us a chance to win.
Yep.
Every night. Right. Mm-hmm. And we just needed the way we are built, again, we just needed our star players to score goals, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And there could be injuries, whatever, we don't know. We'll be waiting to hear about that. But still, other players, whatever, like they say.
Well, Leon all Dreisaitl. I have to say about that is somebody better be getting surgery.
No, we don't want surgery. Hopefully they can heal over the summer. But
I don't really want them to have surgery. But
no. But yeah.
Something dire.
Yeah. With Matthews, I mean, I could notice it all series long. Like his shot just wasn't the same. Like,
well,
the
and he wasn't moving as well. He wasn't skating as well.
Yeah. I don't know what happened because he was perfectly fine or seemed fine in Tampa series. Like,
yeah, but there was some kind of weird hit that he took too. Like,
nobody noticed it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right.
All right. So in our number one spot, yes, we have talked about him again earlier, is Morgan Rielly. What more can we say about him? He is a true leader who bleeds blue and definitely plays for the logo on the front of his jersey. So he had 4 goals, should have been 5, 8 assists in 11 playoff games this season. And he was really the shining star for our team. And he never gave up. He's the one who really... he never ever showed signs of shying away from the moment. That's some of the players sort of seem to at times. So,
yeah. And just actually through the first, I saw this stat from SN Stats. Through this first 7 games of a postseason, he had the 3 goals and 6 assists, which is the most by a Leafs defenseman since Tim Horton had 11 points in 1962. And Tim Horton had 3 goals and 8 assists. So, I mean, when you start getting mentioned with defensemen like Tim Horton, mm-hmm. That's and it was back with the original 6 back then. But you can't say enough about the guy. Really, he should be the captain. I'm going to say it. Like, I mean, I thought we've mentioned Austin Matthews being the captain beforehand a couple of years back and when all that was going on, and JT's captain material. Obviously he was a captain. He was a captain of the Islanders and of us, but just because I think it's just because Riley is obviously he's been here. He's the longest serving Leaf now. Mm-hmm. And just, he shows everybody that was, it's just so funny how things swing, right? Like towards the end of the season, how everybody was saying,
I was just going to say that he was the goat. He was the one that everybody wanted to trade for a bag of pucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he hasn't started the new contract yet. That starts mm-hmm. next year. And everybody's talking about that. Oh God, what's going to happen? Blah, blah, blah. Like we got this defenseman now that, cause he was injured early in the year, mm-hmm. came back. And I'm sure he's one of them that has an injury, but he played phenomenal in these playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Morgan Riley is our star of these playoffs. And like you said, if it went on, he'd be our Conn Smythe,
for sure.
Winner,
without a doubt.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. So, Morgan Riley, he showed the emotion after game five, saying that he loved all his teammates and he hoped there would be no changes in the offseason. So I think to a man, everyone seemed to echo that they didn't want change. So that also mm-hmm. says to me that they know that there's something coming. We're pretty sure there will be changes, just like the team is. And in our third period segment, we're going to talk to Toronto Sun columnist Lance Hornby to get his thoughts on the Leafs' 2023 playoff performance and the potential changes that we may see coming down the pike.
Okay, so for our third period segment, we are welcoming to the show Lance Hornby of the Toronto Sun newspaper, and he's covered the Leafs and the NHL as a reporter for over 40 years with the Toronto Sun.
Yes. Yeah,
so how you doing, guys?
Lance follows the team.
Yes.
How are you?
Yes, I'd sit here and tell you about all the Stanley Cups I've covered, but I don't want to bore your audience, so we'll get right into the questions. Happy Mother's Day, too, to everyone listening and watching.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. So, yeah, just to add, so Lance follows the team every day at home and on the road, and so obviously we want to welcome you to the show, and thanks for coming on the show, Lance.
Great to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so we're just going to get right into it after mm-hmm. another disappointing loss, this time, though, in round two. So at least we got past round one with the Leafs to the Florida Panthers. And I guess my question, being around the team as you are all like every day, basically, did you get any sense after the first round series win, like after the win versus Tampa, that there was like any like big emotional, like did the players look like really drained or even satisfied that they won that first round after so many years? Because that's all that was going on.
Well, let's talk about. I mean, we'll take away the shock and the sadness of bowing out to Florida when they beat Tampa. Let's remember how long that had been and how long that they had been bugged about not going one round. They inherited the mantle of the teams that hadn't made the playoffs for many years, the 2013 team that came so close before that collapse in Boston, and their own Shanahan era slump that started in 2017. Everyone loved how well they played in Washington, and losing that series, who'd have known that was going to be a high point of playoffs? Because what followed later is many opportunities to win the series and move on. So when they beat Florida, there was some exhaustion. But I think they thought this was finally going to be their chance to move ahead. Let's remember the series against Montreal and the series against Columbus that they lost. And they, they left an open road to the Stanley Cup sitting there when they lost. So when they got past Tampa, I don't blame a lot of the people in Maple Leaf Square for jumping up and down and dancing and saying, we want Florida, because not only had Toronto beaten Tampa Bay, got past the first round, but Boston wasn't there either. And so it was like all the boogeymen had disappeared at once. But as we know, it doesn't quite work out that way. And Maple Leafs, I guess, were built for playoffs like they like they wanted to at the start of the year, but sadly just built for one round of playoffs, or we're not getting past the second anyway.
Yeah, because I don't know. We just can't figure out how they, like, especially on home ice, too. Like, they lost all three games on home ice. Like, there's no more. It's the whole, This whole thing seems to be like a road team playoff or something, too, right?
Sheldon Keefe got so sick of hearing about it. But you know what? It's that's too bad. I mean, it is inconceivable that they lose, even in this, which the sports writers and the coaches have dubbed the year of the road team in playoffs. It's shocking that in the alleged center of the hockey universe, with 20,000 people waving towels and another couple of thousand outside, and you ladies are the same as me. You go to downtown Toronto and everybody's walking around with a Leaf sweater, and every bar's got a Go Leafs Go sign out on their chalkboard. You know, it's inconceivable to many that they don't plug into that somehow. And you saw little bits of it here and there, but something always seemed to happen. They let their guard down. They got off to a bad start. And, just remember how crazy the place was going when Nylander scored in game five. And I don't know if you guys saw it. Mm-hmm. The camera focused on him for a minute. And he saw he was on camera and he raises his fist and, hey, let's go. And like for a very undemonstrative player like Nylander, that was something. I mean, that's something we would be talking about today. Yeah. Unfortunately, talking about locker cleanout day in a couple of days.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't really understand it. So, so having covered the team, like we said, for so many years and having seen some teams at least reach some success going to conference finals. So can you put your finger on what's different with the current dynamic versus, you know, some of those teams? So no doubt this is the most talent we've ever had on any Leafs roster in your time as a reporter, probably even before.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, I did like the Burns teams, Pat Burns teams. They caught everybody by surprise. And they, that was a whirlwind that might not be changed again, because let's remember how bad the Leafs were before that and how everything changed on a dime. Yeah. The passion truly came back. That was something else. And Pat Quinn's teams had a lot of talent. It's surprising. Ironically, the farthest they get is against a Paul Maurice coach team that knocks them out again in the second.
That's
got to stick in their craw. But they had Sundin Almas. Now back to your original point. They were built a little bit better. Kyle Dubas probably ignored his own advice in all the years that he hoped to have grow an organic toughness within the Leafs. That is, make the core four better defensive players. And just, you know, his thing was, I don't need to draft a team of thugs that's going to go out and, beat the hell out of everybody at playoff time. I just have to make these guys tougher. And they are. You know, you have a Selke Trophy nominee in Marner. You've had how well Matthews has played. You know, Tavares is a good example there. And then he adds all these people. Noel Achari, he adds he adds Jake McCabe, he adds Luke Shen, he adds some really good defensive players over the course of the year. So when you combine that talent and that makeup of a team, a lot was expected of it. What happens? They run into a bigger, meaner team in Florida, which, was able to push them around, the goal, certainly shut down their scores and win those little battles. I guess the overtime goal by Cousins was a great example there. Radko Gudas just roars to the net, completely knocks Liljegren out with a little nefarious type play, scores, and that's the big goal. Those are the kind of goals the Maple Leafs didn't get from their talented guys and their bottom six. You needed those guys maybe to contribute a bit more as well. And the irony is too, I guess, while we're on the subject, is Toronto finally gets the goaltending it needed. I mean, how many times did they lose a series because a goalie didn't steal them a game? Well, then you had Ilya Samsonov stealing one in Tampa, finally gets Toronto through. And you had Joseph Woll coming out of nowhere to play well and extend their season by a game and also played pretty well in game five as well. So you waste that as well. It's, it's something there I'm sure they're pondering the next couple of days, and that's going to lead to some greater decisions down the road.
For sure. And the we're still in shock a little bit, sort of, but like you're saying, I mean, they even got from their depth players, like they got that production. It really, I mean, we just don't understand, like the top three guys, like really for us it's the core four. Morgan Riley was fantastic. I know they call it the core five now, including him, but I mean, those four guys. Nylander was in and out, which is the what he does
right,
normally.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it depends what day of the week it is and that. But I think he certainly, you know, when he puts his mind to it, like that one third period shift he had in the game, I think it was game two or whatever, game three, that they lost. He put everything into that, and he was the best player on the ice. And then, again, has the big goal on game five. And, you know, people are talking about which of the core four should be sacrificed in the long run. You know, I think he made a pretty good case, even though he's got the most tradable contract for the guy that, the guy that stays. He's an interesting character. I think you want.
That's what I think too. But do you think with Marner, like, do you think the pressure is just too much for him? I feel bad for him. And actually, because like he's a Toronto kid, a local kid, and he wants to win his, like he's always talking to Doug Gilmore, apparently, like as a mentor, but he just freezes in the playoffs in these big, I don't know, in these big moments. So I'm just thinking, I don't know, like
it's him. He's a bit of an enigma in that, I don't think the pressure in Toronto has gotten to other players, but you don't see that off the ice. You see that, I mean, for us in the dressing room, you see him, you can hear him. You hear him behind closed doors, you hear him all over the place. And he's the most, he's got the funniest lines and all that kind of thing. And he, you know, you guys see him, if you're at the game, they show him in the tunnel all the time. He's the guy leading the warm-ups. He's the guy who high-fives everybody. He has the most fun in the warm-up, him and Matthews at the end. So that aspect of playing at home doesn't get to him. But he just, for whatever reason, has not turned the corner in playoff time. And let's face it, I mean, people look at him, they see him as the engine that drives the Leafs in terms of playmaking and that. They're going to go after him and rough him up. But, you know, you have to learn to play through that. And I guess that's the big lesson that hasn't happened yet. And now, now with a couple of the core four, you have to figure out if they're ever going to learn it and, you know, adjust accordingly.
I think, I think you just said it just now. You just used the word adjustment. I wonder if it's not the pressure, I think it's just maybe his lack of ability to adjust to being able to play a slightly different game than he normally is able to play. Like he's normally got a lot more space out there and, you know, that's the first thing that's going to be taken away.
Yeah.
And if you can't seem to adapt to that year after year, maybe that's the issue, not the pressure.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I would have said that 2 or 3 years ago, but they've had a lot of time to adjust. Here's a guy who doesn't miss a game, because of injury as a rule, and when they build a playoff strategy, which is really what the Leafs have done from day one of training camp, because they know they're going to make the playoffs. They know they have to adjust the fact that they can't get him, to get loose, to have a statement game, for lack of a better term, that is a mystery. Yeah. And he's not playing poorly. It's just that he's not breaking through where other people are. And, you know, this is the time for the stars to come out. And in his case, they're still waiting.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right. So I guess the last question I have for me, I guess it was you were talking about all the additions and that were made, let's just say, with McCabe, Shen, O'Reilly.
Right. O'Reilly. No. You know what? I was remiss in not mentioning O'Reilly before, but I'm glad you pushed that up because if since he's arrived, that's been the toughest thing for us. The I before E has completely messed us up, especially when they score from each other. That's been a tough one to do. So I apologize for anything.
Requires a lot of proofreading. A lot of proofreading required.
Oh, it does. It's worse than European names sometimes to try to spell them to remember my O'Reillys and Ridleys. But anyway, I interrupt you. Go ahead.
So I guess, do you think, like, did Kyle Dubas maybe make too many changes to the lineup? That's been another angle that we've heard. Like, I guess that it was like too late in the season to and like Sheldon Keefe wasn't able to really find the right mix, and like we've been fans quite a while, as you know, going back to those Pat Burns and even in the early 80s, but there was always like set lines, let's just say, and set team pairings, and like Keefe never really found that, and since the trade deadline, like it's like with the 11 and 7, but it's like constant mixing. And I don't know, back in the day, the players, I remember they used to like or we think anyways, that they used to like just like set like to know who they're playing with.
Yeah.
That's fine. You can mix it up if there's a bad game, whatever. But I don't know. Did you think that maybe it was Kyle Dubas made the changes like too?
Well,
many
I would say that, you know, if you asked me that question, and I don't know if you would ask me that question after the Tampa series, everyone would have said, no, this is finally they got through. And, you know, it was Ryan O'Reilly and good thing they brought him in, and Jake McCabe's hitting people. And Luke Shen is, you know, he's bantering with the Tampa Bay Lightning and beating them at their own verbal games and all that kind of thing. I would have said no. And I still don't think he make too many changes because it gave him extra options. I mean, let's go back to Mike Babcock, who stubbornly refused to play the kids as much as he should have, right? And then you have the injury of Tavares in the Montreal series. So this was a chance to have a little bit of a smorgasbord of players who could play in different situations. You could, you know, as much as people didn't like 11 and 7, I don't think, especially at home games, the other coach necessarily knew what the Leafs were going to throw at them. And that's not a bad thing if you're trying to guess what the other line is, especially when you don't have last line change. So, you know, as you know, I think it's a team that did need a different look in playoffs. I mean, you know, they examined everything they had, and it didn't, you know, didn't jive the way they wanted, of course, at the end. But I think it gave them some interesting options. Once in a lifetime, you know, chance for, you know, for a roster built along these lines to have that 11-7, and there was no injuries to the defense, so for a change they could move people in and out. But you know, still they're just lacking the right people. The it factor was gone, even though I liked some of the changes. But at the end of the day, I mean, you were still worried about Justin Hall. You were still worried that Giordano had, you know, looked winded by the end of it. You had Gustafson, who never quite found his spot. Now, you know, there's a lot of second guessing now. Would Rasmus Sandin have made a difference there, and that kind of thing?
Shen, that did pop into my mind.
But Shen was
because actually too, it's partly his personality too.
Yes, exactly.
Because he is a kid that is a rise to the occasion kid. Yes. So, you know, we actually were missing some of that.
Yes,
so.
I would have said, you know, in retrospect, it would have been interesting to have him there. But you know, he had Liljegren, who didn't play badly. But you know, they're, you know, just the original thing. I think change is a good thing. Now we know, right? Now we know it's other, you know, there's other factors there. And now we know some of these changes that are now unrestricted free agents. You have a better idea whether or not you want to bring them back or not.
True.
Right.
Okay. So I have one more question, and it's a really simple one. Well, maybe not so simple. It's short. It's brief, but maybe not simple. So, but with the Leafs being such a big fish, some could argue the biggest fish in Gary Bettman's NHL, why can't the Leafs achieve any success in the cap era, in your opinion?
Well, in this, because I think they've made a real commitment to Tavares, which has, well, not before that, and it's maybe unfair to say that it was, you know, I think they've got.
But I'm like thinking even back to, you know, like literally since we have the cap,
I'll go
like
way
our
back.
Teams are not going.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I mean, they've, you know, you go all the way back. And I think, for example, that John Ferguson Jr., when he was GM, I don't think he read the tea leaves correctly. And it's unsurprising because he did some good things. But he didn't do well, I think, early on, because I believe I'd have to go back and check all the numbers. But you had issues with Gary Roberts and Ed Belfour and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that sort of set the table. And then you had, you know, then you were looking at free agents who didn't really, you know, didn't really match up. Then you had, you know, when they didn't sign Sundin to finish his career as a Leaf, I don't think they spent that money wisely. Then you're going all the way into what Lou Lamoriello did in his, you know, I don't think he made as much impact as he could have. Again, a guy, kind of an old schooler who wasn't, you know, that, you know, that adept, I think, at thinking big picture. And then you go into all the money that the Leafs, I know what I was going to say, sorry, Patrick Marleau, I think, was a Lou issue. And that led to a couple of, you know, that took out a lot of resources from a team, and I think didn't long-term work out. And then you get into Tavares, and as well as he's played in regular season, he's left it handicapped to bring in some other people, and that has had an effect. So now you're headed to the next big decisions on Matthews and Nylander, and that's, you know, that is going to dictate, I think, the next 5 years going forward. So hopefully they're hopefully they do a better job.
So it's just it's like a cascade Brian Burke of bad.
Either.
Sorry.
Can't forget Brian Burke either.
Right.
Yeah.
You missed
with
him.
Kessel.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so basically, it seems like it's like one, there's no room for error, I guess, in the cap era is what you're really saying, is that if you've got one bad contract, you know, that basically is going to have a cascade effect for years after.
Yeah, I think so. And you're seeing it out there. But, I mean, you know, the guy's averaged more in the point a game. He's, you know, he's been a good captain. He's been ideal for the Leafs. He's sort of in that that Daryl Sittler mode and that, a good leader and the dressing room and all that kind of thing. But, you know, like Sittler,
he's very straight-faced.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know what? Everyone thinks they should need a, you know, like a Jonathan Toews or somebody like that to be, you know, to be a guy who lifts. And Tavares, I don't think has in playoffs, certainly. And I have to include the series against Montreal that I thought he probably would have been the difference in them getting through there. Right now, looking back on him in playoffs, at least he hasn't been able to, you know, he hasn't been worth that big commitment.
Yeah. Like playoffs wise, because if you just look regular season, definitely he more than is worth, like you're always going to overpay slightly for a free agent anyways. And he's more than worth that contract for regular season.
Oh, I think so. They got their money, and more than their money's worth, really. And like his production numbers are way up, better than, you know. And I'm sure it's part of the reason the Islanders, I think, their other fans gave him quite a razzing. But part of that, I think, was they know what they were missing. And, you know, retrospect, they've certainly missed him, you know, as much as anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, you have time for
go
one
ahead.
More question.
Go ahead.
If we wanted to, what do you think happens with Dubas and Keefe, basically, and the core four, the three things? Like, do you think Dubas is going to come back?
It's all like you took a tangle of wool and, you know, and stuffed it in your drawer and forgot about it and dug it out a month later and it's all tangled up, because it's all one is connected to the other and the other is connected to the other. Does Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment decide that they're going to bring back Shanahan? If Shanahan is back, does he bring back Dubas? If Dubas is back, does he cut ties with his good buddy Sheldon Keefe? You know, and then you've got the residual effect of the core four there, because Dubas is very, very much tied into personally with loyal to Matthews.
Loyalty.
I mean, he was these are his babies, and you know, the same as Dave Nonis before had a, you know, that 2013 Leafs win that game and, you know, they came seven, and who knows what the dynamic change there, where Dave Nonis is still a general manager, Phil Kessel still a Leaf and all that kind of thing. So, you know, that's because of his ties to, you know, Matthews, I think he'd like one more chance to see that come to fruition, but that's going to be a big commitment on everybody's part. And that means Shanahan, if he's back, that means whether or not the bosses at MLSE decide to get their fingers dirty and get in and make some changes. Right now, you know, you had three or four big playoff gates, so they're happy. You have a team that's going to make the playoffs again. So, you know, the easiest thing for them would be to let Shanahan ride out the next 2 years of his contract. And again, he'd probably keep Dubas. There will be there'll be a sacrificial lamb. It'll be Keith behind the bench, or it'll be a trade of one of the core four people. So I think you could look for that. That's definitely going to be the fallout of all this in the next few weeks.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Lance, for coming on the
show.
Oh,
thank you, ladies.
And hope you'll come on again when we go throughout the summer too. We're one of the few Leaf podcasts that just keeps on going.
Okay.
So
if they win the Stanley Cup, I'll definitely come on your show. How's that? I'll make that.
So, oh my God, that's great! book me
for June of 2024.
All right, that sounds good.
That's great.
Yeah. All right. So you can keep up to date with the Leafs and buy a copy of the Toronto Sun. And you can also get Lance's articles directly in your mailbox by visiting the TorontoSun.com TorontoSun.com. So thanks again, Lance, for coming on. This has been great.
Thanks for the plug and happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you again to Lance Hornby for coming on the show. It's almost 4 years now since he wrote the article about our podcast. And that was the first year of our show. back in 2019. So the article gave us a huge boost and helped us to become more visible in the world of Leafs podcasts.
Yes, so you can find the link to the article on our website, ladiestalkingleafs.com, or in any of our social media profile pages. And we'll also include it as a link in the show notes if you would like to check that out. So again, just a reminder that we are reverting back to our normal schedule of publishing episodes twice a month. Our next episode will be on June 7th. But of course, if there's any big news coming out of Leafland in the end of season exit meetings, we will be publishing a bonus episode. So don't worry, we will keep you covered. But make sure you hit the follow button wherever you listen to us. That way you won't miss any of our shows.
Yes, hit the follow button, subscribe. Mm-hmm. Also, to be sure to follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Our handle is at LTL1917. And a reminder to be sure to leave us a rating or a review and let us know what you think of the show. It's easy on Apple and Spotify, and it's important for our show to get more exposure as a source for Leaf content. And we thank you for taking the time.
Another way to help us out is by visiting our Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com. You can follow us there. And if you choose to, you can support us by buying us a coffee. Any donation that you make goes towards helping us produce the show and making it even better for you. So you can find the link to our Ko-fi page on our show notes or in any of our social media profile pages.
Yes. And I was confused a little bit before. Syl was saying five and I was trying to figure it out and it's five star. Yes. Five star rating and review. I kind of stopped there. I was like, okay, I saw a hand. Anyways. Okay. So we want to thank our healthcare workers and first responders for everything they do. Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks as always for listening and now watching. And until next time, go Leafs, go.
Go Leafs, go.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.